Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we explore a new aspect of UFOs or the unexplained, whether it's near-death experiences, past lives, reincarnation, out-of-body experiences, anything unexplained, that's what we're interested in. And tonight, we're going to be talking about Bigfoot in East Ohio. And our guest is longtime researcher Don Keating. But before I introduce our guests, let me get to the UFO news. And we've got some very interesting things happening, especially over in England. There was a very, very exciting sighting which just occurred at the end of last month in April. Captain Ray Bowyer, 50 years old, was flying from Southampton when he spotted a bright yellow light about 10 miles west of Alderney when his plane was about 30 miles from the Channel Islands. Now, this object, he was traveling at about 4,000 feet, and this object appeared to be about 2,000 feet elevation, and it was totally stationary. He described it as having a very sharp, thin yellow appearance with a green spot on it. It appeared to be about 10 miles away, though he later realized that it was about 40 miles distant from them. And his first thought was it was about the size of a 737, about the size of a jumbo jet. But then he realized, because of how far away it was, there was other reports coming in, that it must have been much bigger. And now he's estimating that it could have been as much as a mile wide. And as he watched this object, he saw an identical object further to the west. And as he said, it looked exactly the same, but it was smaller because it was further away. And he can't explain it. At first he thought it was a reflection. He considered actually flying towards it, but decided not to do it because it was just so enormous. And as he says, I had to think of the safety of the passengers first. He said it was actually a pretty scary experience, and he's kind of falling short of saying it was something from another world. All he was saying is, and I'm quoting here, I have never seen anything like it before in all my years of flying. The air traffic controller who was on duty said he did not get anything on his radar, but another pilot who was en route at the same time also described the object, which he said gave the exact same description, except he was looking at it from the opposite side. And this pilot was watching this object from about 1,500 feet beneath his plane. So both pilots were pretty much at the same altitude. And why it didn't appear on radar, it's hard to say, but UFOs apparently do have the ability to block radar. But this sighting is causing a really big to-do, lots of excitement. It's getting a lot of media exposure, and lots of people are coming forth saying that they've seen stuff, including some very prominent airline pilots. Captain Jean-Charles Dubac of France is describing his sighting of a huge object over Paris on January 28, 1994, which was actually a very well-documented sighting and got a lot of press at the time. But he's very excited about this other sighting. And he says what he saw was definitely extraterrestrial. There was no way it was ours. And Captain Bowyer says that since he's publicized his story, he's had at least 20 people come up and tell him additional UFO stories. He says it's had a very positive impact. And he's wondering if these UFO sightings are being set up to sort of publicize the whole UFO thing by the UFO aliens themselves. I don't know if it's possible, but the MUFON statistical UFO report for April 2007 has just come out, and not surprisingly, there's been a lot of activity. In the United States, there's 164 reports of UFOs in just 1 month alone. In Canada, 13, England, 9, Egypt, 7. The rest of the countries kind of fall down to about, 3 and 2 and 1. California, again, leads the nation with 27 reports, followed by Florida with 11, New York, 10, and Texas, 8. those four states are consistently in the top. No one's really quite figured out why. And what else do we got going on here? There was another recent sighting, which I thought was very interesting, which occurred in Apache Junction. And this is in Arizona. On January 28th, 2007, a man was driving and observing the skies when he saw a suspicious-looking cloud hanging along the Superstition Mountains. And he felt intuitively that there was something strange with this cloud. And so he quickly grabbed his digital Panasonic camera and, while traveling at about 70 miles per hour, actually photographed this object, which appears in the current issue, the April issue of the MUFON Journal. And it's a pretty interesting photograph. I'm not saying it's a conclusive. UFO photographs are not really worth a thousand words these days because they can be pretty easily faked. But I think it's a pretty exciting report. What I think is really interesting is the witness felt like there was a telepathic communication which took place. He felt like the UFO was showing up on purpose, just so that he could photograph it, which is something you hear a lot about. I've heard that many times. And so it's another interesting report. And that's pretty much it for the news. I want to get to our guest tonight because we've got a very, very exciting show. We're talking about Bigfoot in East Ohio, and our guest tonight is Don Keating. Now, Don Keating began researching Bigfoot in July of 1984. What's interesting, it's a very interesting story. His family had just experienced a major UFO sighting, and he went to the library to do research about it, and instead found a book about Bigfoot that he apparently found more interesting, and this is how his research began. And one thing led to another. He read articles in the newspaper, started interviewing the witnesses, and started hearing from other witnesses and started doing live field work. Eventually, I believe he's a founding member of the Eastern Ohio Bigfoot Investigative Center. We'll have to ask him that. But Don, thank you for coming onto the show tonight.
Thanks a lot, Preston. I appreciate it.
So did you believe in Bigfoot growing up as a kid?
No, not really. I didn't really have any interest in the paranormal as I was growing up as a child. My main interest was the subject of meteorology, the study of weather, and I hadn't the foggiest idea what Bigfoot or even UFOs were. The UFO encounter that you allude to actually took place in 1976, 4 miles outside of Newcomerstown, Ohio, and then my interest in the Bigfoot phenomenon began in July of 1984.
Oh, okay. So, tell us about this UFO sighting. And I know it's kind of off topic, but it's sort of, there is a link there, I think, because in some Bigfoot cases, people do see UFOs. So I was kind of curious about that.
Yeah, the UFO sighting, briefly, it just took place in July of 1976. Myself and my family were on our way out to, or we were on our way out to other family members out in the country, to their residence, and this thing pretty much followed us. It paced us for a period of approximately 4 miles, and when we got out to the relative's house, there were numerous eyewitnesses, and probably a dozen of us or more. This UFO hovered at just above treetop level. I couldn't really tell you an exact time, but it probably was up there for, I'm guessing, 5 to 10 minutes. And it was a saucer-shaped. It had lights on the top and the bottom of it. And in the middle of it, it had two or three windows. And we could actually see the inside of the craft was illuminated. It was quite a fascinating sighting. I wish I would have had a video camera then, of course. It was something to behold. And It really makes you wonder what's out there, and especially, you know, when this thing paced us. You know, we wondered. By the time we got to our relative's house, we were quite shook up. So needless to say, it wasn't something that we wanted to see again anytime soon after it had actually taken place.
Right. I think if you don't know anything about the subject and you suddenly see one of these, it can be pretty shocking. So.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, it made us sit back and realize that things out there that we didn't understand or didn't know about back in 76, and I'm sure it's still that same way today.
So, what, like almost eight years later, you finally went to the bookstore to research this, or the library? And that's when you picked up a book on Bigfoot.
Yeah, well, back in 76, in July of 76, I was only like 13 years of age and could really care less about it. I mean, you know, if it's something that followed us, that shook us up, and I pretty much dropped it. I graduated in 81, and then 84, I had some spare time on my hands and decided to go to the library and check out the, you know, the books on UFOs to see if there was anything in any of the UFO books that was similar to what we had seen. And actually, the book, Sasquatch, the Apes Among Us, written by John Green, seemed to be more interesting to me due to the fact that it had a lot more in the way of visual material in it, drawings and footprint photographs, and plaster casts, photographs, and things of that sort. So I thought I would pick that up and take a look at it and read through it and check it out and see what there was to it. And as a result of that, it turned out that the passing interest turned into a obsession about a month afterwards, and one thing led to another, and here we are today.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you picked up John Green's book. He just happens to be, like, the major guy in the field, huh? One of the major pioneers. And you actually called him up. Is that right? You made contact
with him? Yeah, I called him probably 2 weeks after I had read the book and talked to him. I wanted to talk to him and see what his take was on all this. You know, he had written the book, and I wanted to see what he thought. And we had a good hour and a half long conversation. And after that, you know, I never thought anything else would take place. I returned the book to the library and pretty much forgot about it. And about a month later, late August, there was an article in the local newspaper, the New Cumberstown News, about strange animals being seen in that area. One was a large cat, like a mountain lion. One was a large exotic-looking bird, like a large parrot. And the third animal was a 7 to 8 foot tall, dark brown or black hair-covered creature on the south side of New Cumberstown. And as a result of that article appearing, ironically, I had just finished Green's book a month before. I decided to go to the New Cumberstown News office because I had known everyone at the office at that time and talk to them and see what they could tell me about it. And I did several interviews. One was an interview with all three of the boys at the same time. And then before that, I actually interviewed all three of them separately. And after I did that, I was fairly convinced that they believed that they had claimed to have seen what they did.
Right. What did they see?
Claimed to have seen. A 7 to 8 foot tall, dark brown or black hair-covered creature on the other side of the Tuscarawas River, just outside New Cumberstown.
What was it doing? I mean, what did they say happened?
Well, what they were doing was they were just hiking around. Just like kids would do, you know, they were teenagers at the time. And they rounded this bend in the trail, and they saw this thing standing there, pulling leaves off of a tree and eating them. And they looked at it for a few seconds, and they turned around, and they hightailed it back to town, which is about a mile-and-a-half trip. They turned into a run, and they told one of the boys told his skeptical fathers about it, and they went out there the next day, and they checked it out, and they found some large footprints in the ground where the thing had been standing by the tree.
So, wow.
It was April of 1984, I believe, and it was quite an interesting encounter.
So that's what started it all. So what did you do at that point? I mean, what did you start contacting other witnesses, or
hey,
how did you go about?
No, what I did was I had sent a copy of the article to John Green. I then, about a month and a half later, I got a reply from a gentleman by the name of Tom Archer, who lived in Reynoldsburg, Ohio at the time. And as a result of my article, as a result of the article that I had sent to John Green, he sent it to Tom because he had contact with Tom a couple of years prior. And Tom was only like 85 miles from me. So he contacted me, and we did some field research, and we got out into the field. We investigated some ledge sightings, some track discoveries, things of that sort. And we tried to put two and two together and decided or determine whether or not that creature was in the area. And one thing led to another, as they say.
Right. So how did tell me about the Eastern Bigfoot, Ohio's, or let me see, what's it called again?
Eastern Ohio Bigfoot Investigation Center. When I started researching in 1984, I decided that, being at that time and still that I was in Eastern Ohio and I wanted to investigate these reports, I thought the name was fitting, Eastern Ohio Bigfoot Investigation Center, because I have no desire to go out, you know, through all corners of the state or the Midwestern U.S. My main stomping grounds are the eastern part of the state. I'll go throughout Eastern and Central and Southern Ohio and investigate reports if I get them on a timely manner and they seem to be good. But that's how the EOBIC was started in 1985, or actually 1984. And then in July of 85, I decided to hold a meeting because Tom had introduced me to a group in Alliance, Ohio, called the Tri-County UFO Study Group. And what those folks were doing at the time, and they still are, was they were meeting on a monthly basis discussing recent activity or sightings as far as UFOs were concerned in the not only in the state of Ohio, but nationwide. And I told Tom, I said, you know, it'd be a good thing if we try to put together a one-time meeting and see if we can get people to come out of the woodwork, so to speak. So what we did was we scheduled a meeting, and we had like 35 people show up, and a number of them had encounters or sightings or track discoveries that they wanted to share with us. So that's how at that time, the Eastern Ohio Bigfoot Study Group was formed, and that's how that organization was formed at that time. And as a result, we had numerous people come forward and tell us about their encounters.
Wow. So how often do reports come in, would you say, like on average?
Oh, I don't know. On the average, you know, we might get a good report once every 6 to 8 weeks, if we're lucky. I'm talking about a sighting report. So.
Right. So, well, Eastern Ohio, is this area that you do get these reports from, is it very rural? I mean, is there lots of places Bigfoot could live and go undetected for all these years?
Oh, yeah. There are a number of places where this thing can be running around and people wouldn't detect it for quite some time. They would have to really be pretty much on its heels, so to speak, to run into it. During the summer, when the foliage is out here in Eastern Ohio, and as far as that is concerned, from Central to Eastern Ohio, it's extremely rugged and it's very dense. There are some places in this neck of the woods where if you were to go out into the woods and take a drive during the middle of the afternoon, during the middle of summer, you could be in places where it's really dark. Very little sunlight would reach the forest floor. So there are a number of places where this thing has all that it needs to exist without being detected. And, you know, wild animals need three things: food, water, and shelter. And that's what it has ample supply of around here.
Right. Well, what would you say do you have one area that's probably the top producing area, like a certain valley or a certain location?
Well, we have a geographical area that we call the Sasquatch Triangle. And that goes from near Kernersville, Ohio, southeastward to Salt Fork State Park, and then northwestward to Newcomerstown. It has produced the highest quantity in a very small geographical area of any place in Ohio. there are several contributing factors for that. One, there are numerous, quite a number of old mining locations out there, and we know that there are numerous mine shafts that remain open. It's also in an area where there are two wildlife areas. One would be the Woodbury Wildlife Area, mainly in Coshocton County, Ohio. The other would be the Willis Creek Basin, the Columbus and Southern Ohio Coollands, and that is along Willis Creek in Ohio, northern Muskingum and southern Coshocton County.
Right.
My usage areas as far as outdoors recreation is concerned, that could be one of the reasons that it has the highest concentration of sighting and track discoveries in any location of Ohio. So that would be the area, I would say, in East Central Ohio that has the highest probability of someone taking a Saturday or Sunday drive and maybe seeing one of these things.
Right. So what's the earliest report you have coming from that area? What year?
From that area, I would have to get into my archives and check it out. I can't give you a date or even a year off the top of my head. And as far as Ohio is concerned in general, the most recent report that I've heard of was in late December of 2006, not in Salt Fork State Park. I also understand there may have been a report of another sighting within the past 2 weeks at Salt Fork State Park, but that information, for whatever reason, appears to be confidential, and the person that has received it doesn't have the desire to let the information out as far as specifics. They just kind of dangle the bait in front of your nose. So that's what we have right now.
So is there any difference, would you say, from Bigfoot in Ohio to Bigfoot in other areas like California or, you know, the Florida skunk ape, so to speak?
Not really. I mean, other than name and geographical location, they're basically the same, anywhere between 6 and 9 foot in height, basically covered with dark colored hair or fur, and walk upright on two legs. The big problem we have is we don't have a positive specimen. We don't have proof that this thing exists, so we're going on a lot of speculation and theory.
Right. Well, how would you explain that? I mean, we have bones of so many other animals. How come we don't have a Bigfoot yet?
Well, there could be several different reasons, and I'm speaking for Ohio in particular. There are a number of carnivores out there. You have a lot of, you have coyote in all of Ohio's 58 counties. You have the turkey vultures or the buzzards that clean up dead animals rather adequately, and any other number of animals out there that feed on flesh. But whenever an animal dies in Ohio, if it's not along the side of the road, it's eaten up by one of those meat-eating animals, and then whatever is left of it, the bones in particular, there's a little critter in Ohio called a deer mouse, and they feed on bones. So if there's any deer mice in that area, they would probably do a good job of cleaning up a lot of the bones. And then if they don't take care of all of it, there is a high content of acid in Ohio's soil. So that'll probably wear away at the bones rather quickly as well. I don't know for sure when or if anybody's ever going to find a body of a Bigfoot in Ohio or anywhere else as far as that's concerned. Hopefully soon, but frankly, I don't think it'll be in my lifetime.
What about hunting Bigfoot? What's the policy on that? Is that legal? Or do you know if there's any law?
Well, there's only one location in the United States at this point in time that has a law against the bagging of a Bigfoot or going out to bag a Bigfoot, and that's Skamania County, Washington. Skamania County is where Mount St. Helens is located. That ordinance went into effect on April 1st of 1969, and it wasn't an April Fool's joke. It was a real ordinance, and it still is on the books today. When it first came out, they had a $10,000 fine and 5 years, a $10,000 fine and or 5 years in jail for anyone convicted of trying to bag or killing a Bigfoot. They've relaxed on those fines and jail time quite a bit since 1969. It's now, if I understand it correctly, up to a $1,000 fine and up to 1 year in jail. The point is, it's still against the law to go into Skamania County with the intent to kill a Sasquatch or kill a Bigfoot. If you want to go out and try and bag one of these things, good luck. You're going to have something very strong in all likelihood, like an elephant gun. I don't know how illegal elephant guns are in any of the 50 U.S. states. And if you kill one, hopefully you're quick enough to get it out of there. If there is another one in the area, because as big as they are, I don't think I'd want to get into a street fight with them if there is a second one in the area and you just killed its buddy.
Right.
As far as whether or not it's human, that's going to be another problem you run into, because if you kill one of these things and it turns out to be closer to human than animal, you've got a very serious problem on your hands just because you wanted to prove the existence of a Bigfoot.
Right, right. No, I don't think it would be such a big controversy if Bigfoot wasn't walking on 2 feet. I mean, if it was a quadruped, no one would be making as big a deal about it. But the fact that it could be intelligent, I think, is what makes it so interesting. So what is your opinion on that? Is it intelligent like humans? Is that a possibility, do you think?
Well, I think it's got a good amount of woodwise, so to speak, wild savage. You know, it's been smart enough to stay away from human detection for quite some time. I can't really say how smart the thing is. I mean, that's really just hard to say.
Right. Well, do you think it's dangerous? I mean, if approached, are there accounts of people being hurt by Bigfoot?
Next to nothing in the way of aggressive behavior towards humans. Back in the mid-1800s, there was a story that Teddy Roosevelt wrote about in his book called The Wilderness Hunter, about a couple of trappers in, I believe, in Idaho. And one of them was allegedly killed by a Bigfoot, but that was back in the 1850s. Now, of course, they say Roosevelt is the type of person that if he didn't believe it was real, he wouldn't have written about it. Well, it may have been real, may not have been. Somebody might have been really spinning a good yarn, you know, on him. But there's, like, and as far as I know, there's next to nothing in the way of aggressive behavior towards humans.
I seem to remember there being a case of a kidnapping in British Columbia. Is that right? Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, that was back in 1924. That was Albert Osman.
Right. What do you think about that case?
Well, he first contacted either John Green or Rene DeHinden. I'm not quite sure which one of those individuals he contacted very first to begin with. And I do know that John Green or DeHinden had requested that he write up his story. So he did, and he had written it up, and he even had it notarized. And I believe not too long, well, maybe several years or 10 years or more afterwards, he came out with another version of the story, except this time it was significantly longer than what the original version was. So that brought up a shadow of a doubt as far as whether or not Osman was actually telling the truth or not.
Right.
That's probably the case you're talking about, Albert Osman in 1924. There are also some details about the story that just don't match up. And as far as geographical locations are concerned in the Pacific Northwest, but I'm not well-versed enough on that story to comment on those or to compare apples and oranges to you, you know, without knowing all the facts.
Right. Okay, well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Don Keating. And we're talking about Bigfoot in East Ohio. Now, your website is the Eastern Ohio Bigfoot Investigative Center, www.eobic.com. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so what are some of the more exciting, extensive cases that have taken place in Ohio?
Well, I would say one of them would be a location just about 40 miles south from Summerstown, near Caldwell, Ohio, a community called Sharon, Ohio. A woman and her three children spotted one of these creatures on July 2nd, 1984, at what is known as the Sharon, Ohio Grange Hall. They had a very close encounter with it. They had a very clear view of it from the head all the way down to near the feet. They observed it for an extended period of time. She did a pencil drawing for me of what she saw, her three kids saw, as well as a watercolor painting of what they saw. And they didn't feel threatened at all. In fact, the children were very interested and very fascinated with it. The one girl walked up to her mom and said, and she tugged on her shirt, and she said, "Mom, is that a Bigfoot?" And the mother said, "Yeah, I think it is. We have to leave slowly so we don't spook it or make it mad or whatever."
And, were they out hiking, or?
No, they were just out at Grange Hall. They were playing on the merry-go-round and swings and things of that sort. So, you know, they were less than a couple hundred yards away from the residence. Another series of events that took place was in the summer of 1978 in a near community called Minerva, Ohio. That's well known for the Minerva Monster, and there were numerous encounters that took place up there.
Hello?
Should I continue?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wondered because I heard some chatter in the background. There was another series of events that took place in the summer of 1981 in a community called Rome, Ohio.
Here we have a caller.
Oh, hi, Preston. This is Bill Green from Bristol, Connecticut.
Oh, hi. How are you doing?
Good. So, hey, Darren, what's new?
Oh,
not a lot of.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's been a while. Dan, so what's going to be going on with your Bigfoot conference this coming up soon?
The 19th Annual Bigfoot Conference Expo will be taking place at Salt Fork State Park at the Lodge. We will have four speakers. Tony Healy from Australia will be there. Craig Heinzelman from New Hampshire. We will have filmmaker Pat Holbrook from Ohio, and then we will also have the lady from Sharon, Ohio, who was with her three children in July of 84. She will be speaking about that sighting for the first time ever publicly. The conference is free of charge. There's no admission charge. Anyone can attend. Last year we had about 375 people.
Wow.
We fully expect 400 people to be there this year, and it's the 19th annual conference. It's a event that continues to grow every year. We have people from all over the United States that attend. I know Larry Lund from Vancouver, Washington will be there. There's a lady by the name of Diane Stocking from Florida who's going to be there. Craig from New Hampshire. You know, so we've got people from all over the United States and possibly Canada that will be attending the conference, and of course Tony Healy from Australia will be there as well.
That's great.
More information can be obtained about the conference by going to the website eobic.com and clicking on the appropriate links for the 19th Annual Bigfoot Conference Expo.
Yeah. But let's see. So have you gotten any recent footprint reports or any strange sound reports or eye glow reports lately in Ohio?
No, we haven't. The most recent thing that took place, to my knowledge, was the December 30th, 2006 sighting at Salt Fork State Park, and then there was a track discovered, I believe, also on the same day, December 30th of 2006, at Salt Fork State Park. So,
do you think there's some sort of migrational pattern for these creatures down in Ohio in various areas where there's like either a high or a low concentration of sightings?
That's a good question.
I don't think they really migrate that much. I mean, I don't think they migrate from Ohio to Florida during the winter and then from Florida back to Ohio during the spring and summer. You know, a lot of animals, if they have an area where they're at, all they need is food, water, and shelter. And if those three things are available, they're not likely to roam around too much away from where they have what they need to exist.
Yeah.
So I don't think they roam around. I mean, I'm not saying that they stay within a 5-mile area of a certain pinpoint, you know, possibly 50 to 100 miles, give or take. But I don't think they go from state to state to state.
Yeah. Have you ever investigated, like, a possible cattle mutilation that dealt with a Sasquatch in Ohio?
No, I don't think we've had any cattle mutilations of big creatures in Ohio.
So, Bill, I had you on the show last year. Has there been any activity in your area recently?
Not in Connecticut. There's been some reports I see on various databases in New England, but that's about it. It's been real quiet. But that could change soon. And Don, your documentary, your new documentary, Mystery of the Sasquatch Triangle, is awesome.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like watching two documentaries. It's like watching two documentaries in one.
Well, thanks for calling in, Bill.
Yeah, you're welcome. Keep in touch.
Okay, yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.
So, Don, so what's this about Bigfoot smelling so bad? Does he smell so bad, and where does this come from, and what does this mean? And do you have any theories about that?
Well, you know, when I first started, the consensus was that the creature had a terrible smell. And over the years, with the research that I've done, I've learned that that's not necessarily the case. In fact, as far as odors are concerned, odors regarding this thing are reported in the vast minority of sightings as compared to the majority. I suppose it all depends on what their hygiene habits are, as well as what they're running around in. You know, if they run around the old mining territory and they get a lot of sulfur on them, then they could smell like the rotten eggs. But I don't think there's too much in the way of odors are concerned with these things. I think that's a vast minority as far as reports are concerned.
Really? So you don't get a lot of those kind of reports there then?
No. I've heard a variety of reports, like it smelled like a dead animal, or it smelled like a wet, musty dog, things of that sort. But that's really the minority of a very small number of sighting reports have a smell associated. And besides that, if you get a report and somebody says, well, it smelled like a wet, musty dog, well, how do you know if the Bigfoot that you saw was actually what had the odor to begin with?
Right.
We don't. So it's all speculation and theory.
So what about the reports of UFOs in association with Bigfoot? Have you gotten any of those? I know they're pretty rare, but in my own investigations, I've run across like 2 or 3 of them here in California.
Yeah, and as far as UFOs being connected with Bigfoot sightings in Ohio, to my knowledge, there haven't been any reports that have shown any type of connection between the two in Ohio.
Right. So, well, what do you think of that connection? Do you think there's anything to it?
I'm not the type of person, you know, that would discount something like that. I mean, I never say never. But, you know, first off, we're dealing with two things that we can't even prove exist. We can't prove that UFOs and aliens exist. We can't prove that Bigfoot exists. So to say that there's a connection between the two of them would really be putting the cart before the horse. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we've just got to have evidence to prove that they exist to begin with, and then let's worry about the possibility of the connection between the two of them. In Pennsylvania, I do know that there have been reported sightings of UFOs and Bigfoot in the same geographical area during the same very short time period. Now, whether or not it was just by pure coincidence that a UFO happened to be flying around when a Bigfoot was roaming the woods, who knows? But, you know, I'm not saying that it's not possible, but on my possibility meter, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being definitely and 1 being not at all, I'm going to give it about a 2.
Right. Well, I know it's very rare, but... So what about, like, telepathic reports? I've heard of that, too, people saying that they know what the beast is thinking or it knows what they're thinking. I guess that runs in the same general area, though.
Yeah, you know, Johnny Carson used to do a character on the Tonight Show called, I think it was Konak, you know, the Magnificent or something to that effect, where he was able to read what was inside of the envelope before he even opened the envelope. Telepathically, you know, yeah, like you said, here again, I want to stick that in the same realm as the possibility of UFOs and Bigfoot being connected. Anybody with a vivid imagination is going to be able to tell you a really fantastic story and make it sound like it's true. Problem is, there's no evidence. And, I mean, you know, I don't know. Telepathically, I've never heard of any sightings or Bigfoot encounters in Ohio where somebody claimed that this thing was being able to talk to them telepathically in the state of Ohio. So, like you say, I would have to put that in the same realm as the UFO and Bigfoot connection. And I'm not trying to downplay these and say that it's not possible. I mean, I might sound kind of negative on them, but realistically, I just don't know of any, I don't know of hardly any reports in Ohio that would point to that possibility.
Right.
So. I'm not saying that it's not possible. I'm just saying that I don't know of any reports that say that it happened.
So what, in your opinion, is the best evidence that we have going on for the existence of Bigfoot right now? I mean, like the Patterson film, would you consider that?
Yeah, I mean, if the Patterson film contains the image of a real Bigfoot creature, that's the best thing that we've got. We have no bones, we have no body, we have numerous plaster castings, we have hundreds, if not thousands, of photographs of footprints. We have a few photos that are so fuzzy it could be somebody's thumb in front of the camera lens. We, you know, frankly, we don't have a whole heck of a lot to go on. The best thing that we have to go on are the eyewitness testimony. And you rate those based on the credibility and the professionalism of the person that reported it to you. And what I mean by the professionalism is, was the guy somebody that's totally unemployed and is broke and is looking for a way to find a dollar by selling a story, or was the individual a ranger at a state park who knows what he saw? He's a professional and he has nothing to gain by fabricating a story. The eyewitness testimony is probably the best thing that we've got going. Footprints can be faked. Footprints have been faked. Films have been faked. Videos have been faked. Photos have been faked.
I heard it's very difficult to fake footprints, at least for an investigator can detect them because of the step length. Is that, would you say that that's an accurate way of detecting whether some footprints are hoaxed or not?
Well, if you have a series of tracks that are 5 feet apart from each other in a dusty field or a snow field or whatever, and there's no other footprints around, yeah, you got a pretty good case right there. But if you have a series of tracks in the mud or in the dirt where there's all kinds of human tracks around, and John Doe calls you up and says, "Hey, guess what I found in my backyard? Come take a look at these." "Oh, I'm sorry. Me and my 250 neighbors and relatives just happened to track around and look at these before you got here." Then the alleged evidence is already tainted.
Right.
Tainted because of the fact that you already had a half a gazillion people walking through there, and you have no way of knowing if somebody took some cookie-cutter footprints and planted those tracks in the ground. The best thing is that we run across a series of tracks. I have run across a series of tracks before, alongside of a road in the mud where nobody else had been through the area. Nobody knew I was going there. They were 17 and a half inches in length. There were five of them, and they were 4.5 to 5 feet apart from each other.
Wow.
So that's a good example of a possible
case where a series of tracks was left behind, and they were discovered before anybody got to the scene and painted the location.
Now, there were five footprints, you said?
Five footprints, and then it walked back into a field of weeds.
Oh, wow. So how many Bigfoot would you say, I mean, guessing or estimating based on your reports that you've received, how many Bigfoot, what's the population of Bigfoot in Ohio?
There is no way of knowing that. The only thing we can go by is the reason that I catalog reports to begin with is to take a look at a specific year, like 2005, 2006, whatever, and see what the number of different sizes were that were reported, the number of different colors, the different size tracks, and where they were located across the state of Ohio during a specific time period. That's the only way we can even get a slight ballpark figure of how many creatures may have been roaming the state at that time. But other than that, I don't know of any formula to estimate how many Bigfoot creatures are in Ohio or anywhere else on the face of the earth at any given time. Because,
right.
You know, like I said before, we can't even prove the thing exists. So how are we going to have any real good idea of how many of them there are, you know, at the same time? And the problem is, you know, if we take 2006 sightings, and then we say, well, there was a sighting here and a sighting here and a sighting here during this short time period, three different sightings, three different sizes.
I think we might have another caller. Do we have another caller?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi,
what's your name?
This is Larry Lennon from out in Vancouver, Washington, and I know Don.
Hey, Larry.
And I was just, right, Don, and I was just wondering, we're all planning on getting out of here and heading to his conference here, that way, I think it's on the 19th there in Ohio. And I was wondering if there's going to be a chance that you'll be showing the footage of that white Bigfoot creature that you happened to film back there.
Well, there's a possibility, yeah. That's incorporated into the new documentary that Bill Green was talking about, the Sasquatch Triangle, The Mystery Continues. You know, I may have it running on the DVD player as something for people to take a look at, you know, either in between speakers or something to that effect before or after the conference. Larry mentions the white Bigfoot film. I call it an unknown entity. I've never called it a Bigfoot. It was totally by accident. It was about 100 yards away, and, you know, didn't know it was on film until about a month or a year and a half later. Numerous people have been to the site. They've looked at the site. They've looked at the film. And I don't know of anybody that's really come up with a positive ID as to what's on the film. But, yeah, Larry, there's a moderate to a good chance that I'll show that film during some course of the conference, if for no other reason, for people who may be there that I've never seen it before.
Well, I've seen it a couple of times myself. I'm just wondering about, you know, there's going to be a big crowd there this year, and I just know that not everybody's had the opportunity to see it. So I was just wondering, you know, if they had that to look forward to. So I'll get off here and let's get back to business, and I'll see you there on the 19th, I believe it is, Don, right?
You got it, Larry.
Okay, we'll see you at the conference. Thanks a bunch. Bye-bye.
Yep, thanks for calling in.
You betcha. Bye.
That's great. There's a lot of interest in this subject. That's great to hear. So.
Yeah, there is. You know, it's a subject that has a life of its own. You know, people are interested in it 365 days a year. It's cyclical. You know, the more newspaper articles and stuff that come out about a sighting or whatever, the more people that get an interest because it's in the public eye. But you know, it's kind of like the weather. You have good periods and you have bad periods. So
right.
That there will always be an interest in the Bigfoot phenomenon.
Yeah, so I subscribe to the UFO News Clipping Service, which actually has a Fortiana cryptozoology section at the back. And pretty much every month there are reports coming in from somewhere across the United States of this creature. So So in your own investigations, have you ever run across any, I mean, have you had a first-hand encounter, would you say, with Bigfoot?
Yeah, I've had a sighting. September 15th of 85, 4 miles south near Cummerstown, we were in an area where sightings and track discoveries had taken place numerous times during the summer of 85. And we were out on a stakeout out there. It was about 10:04 p.m. This thing come down the hill from the north side of the property, walked into a field of goldenrod weeds as it was walking towards the chicken pen. It was twice as high as the goldenrod weed. The next day we were out there and estimated it was approximately 9 foot in height. It was light in color. I had a good look at it because it was during a clear moonlit night, the night of the 15th of September, 85. I'd say that was the sighting that convinced me that the thing is out there. I know that it was out there at that time because I saw it with my own eyes. But if I could turn back the hands of time, more often than not, I think to myself, I would probably make it so that I didn't see it because my life would be a whole lot simpler. I wouldn't have the knowledge that it was out there. I would continue to theorize and speculate and walk the line as to whether or not it exists. But when you see it yourself, it's hard to discount what your own eyes can see.
Right, right. Well, I know what you're saying, because I heard a Bigfoot once, I believe. A friend mm-hmm. was having encounters up in Acton, outside the Angeles Forest. And I've told the story before, but she was convinced she knew where this Bigfoot was living. And she took me out there into this valley, and as soon as we pulled over, late at night, this thing screamed like 3 times, or roared. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it was, but it was pretty convincing to me.
Hmm.
So, what are some of the sounds that Bigfoot makes? I mean, I've heard that it can whistle and scream high pitched like a woman. Is this true?
Well, I would say the high pitched woman like screaming, could easily be misinterpreted as a Bigfoot, but in reality, it could be a mountain lion. As far as some other sounds are concerned, I've got a couple of sounds on audio recordings that I've taken, and you got to understand that when these sounds were recorded, nobody saw a Bigfoot open its mouth. What we're doing is we're just going by what we know and as far as the animals and the birds that are indigenous to this area and comparing the known sounds of animals and birds to what we have on tape. The one sound that I have on tape that is very interesting is it's a sound that sounds like a mournful cry. And it was recorded in the middle of the afternoon in September of 1991 in Coshocton County, Ohio. There was another series of noises that were heard in some old mining territory in Coshocton County, Ohio, back in June of 1988. And, no, I take that back, 1987. And those were some really unusual sounds. They were recorded on tape. They were so unusual I can't even just begin to describe what they were like. As far as sounds are concerned, there have been reports and there have been whistling sounds where people think that it could be Bigfoot. That's possible. Sounds of a woman screaming, like I say, that could easily be a mountain lion instead of a Bigfoot. But like I said, I don't know of very many, if any, reports of where someone actually has their eyes on a Bigfoot and it opened its mouth and made a sound. I hate to sound skeptical or pessimistic about a lot of things. I know I've taken a somewhat negative approach to a lot of the answers I've given you this evening, but the fact of the matter is, I guess I'm from Columbus, Ohio. I was born in Columbus, but I'm kind of like taking the opinion anymore that I'm like from Missouri, the show me state.
I think you have to with a subject that's, unproven. I think you're better off at least.
Yep.
So you said that the Bigfoot ranges from 6 to 9 foot, but I've heard people say like as high as 12 feet. Do you think that's an exaggeration?
It just all depends on the condition when they saw what they claim to have seen. I mean, the best thing that you could hope for is someone have a sighting where they saw this thing walk by a tree and
there was a branch hanging down, and its head was as high as the branch. Then you can get a really good idea of how tall it was. Some people may be so scared to death that they thought it was 12 foot tall, when in reality it was only 9 foot tall. A 9 foot tall sounds small compared to 12 foot, but you got to remember 9 foot is still quite large for an animal walking upright on two legs.
Right, taller than a human, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I don't have a problem with anything except 9 foot tall. Not much of a problem anyway, even though I'm 9 foot tall. And as far as getting into the double digits, as far as heights are concerned, it gets a little more hard to believe.
Right. So people normally see Bigfoot in small groups, or just one or two Bigfoot. They never see, like, large groups of these things traveling together?
No, the huge majority of sightings are of a single creature, one creature.
Huh.
There are reports on file where there have been multiple creatures seen, but the huge majority of reports are of a single creature.
Huh. And where does Ohio rank in terms of number of reports across the United States? Do you know? I mean, is it as active as California?
I'm not quite sure. I don't know what the most recent numbers are for Ohio, California, or anywhere as far as that's concerned. But I believe it's definitely in the top 10.
Right. So is your investigative center the major center there in Ohio for investigating Bigfoot? Or?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not one to...
Right. All right. Well,
something to that effect. I mean, there's a lot of them that have cropped up out of the woodwork.
Well, I mean, your website is pretty amazing. So, yeah, I want to just give it out to people again. It's www.eobic.com, the Eastern Ohio Bigfoot Investigative Center. Our guest is Don Keating. Don, we're approaching the end of the hour.
Cool.
Is there anything people should know about Bigfoot before we have to let you go?
Well, like I said, you know, it's difficult to prove the existence of something or say that it exists without any hardcore evidence. Although I'm sure it's out there. I've seen it myself. So it's very difficult for me to be skeptical. If you see one of these things, you know, and you might happen to be in Ohio, Pennsylvania, or whatever, just do some research and contact one of your local investigation centers, like the Eastern Ohio Bigfoot Investigation Center or the Pennsylvania Society for Bigfoot Studies. And, you know, just keep an eye open. They're out there somewhere. Just have to find them. It's like looking for a needle in the haystack. The only problem is the needle continues to move.
Right. Well, one of these days someone's going to get, you know, really good photographic proof, or we're going to find a body, or one of these days there's going to be a sighting involving so many people, we can't ignore it.
Yeah, it can't come too soon.
All right, Bill. Don, sorry. Thank you very much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you.
A great guest. The show is UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest has been Don Keating. We've been talking about Bigfoot in East Ohio. If you want to learn more about this, please visit the website, www.eobic.com. Next week, our guest is Dawn McIntyre. She's an intuitive mystic and spiritual healer. So that's what we'll be talking about next week. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you can join us then. Have a great evening.